Part 2, Chapter 2. Rome against Fatima. 1959. An unexpected offensive against Fatima, Father Fuentes publicly disavowed. On June 22, 1959, the account of Sister Lucy's conversation with Father Fuentes appeared in Portugal in the Royalist daily paper, A Voz. Who would have foreseen that this text, already published in the United States in Fatima Findings, Father Ryan's Review, and approved by several bishops, including the Bishop of Fatima, was about to unleash a violent campaign which would harm the cause of Fatima so gravely. July 2, 1959, the note from the Chancery of Coimbra. On July 2, 1959, the Chancery of Coimbra published an aggressive note, which was at the very least disconcerting. Here, first of all, is the integral text. Father Augustin Fuentes, postulator of the cause of beatification for the seers of Fatima, Francisco, and Jacinta, visited Sister Lucy at the Carmel of Coimbra and spoke to her exclusively about things concerning the process in question. But after returning to Mexico, his country, if we can believe an article in A Voz of last June 22, and a translation by M.C. de Braganca published on July 1 by the same journal, this priest allowed himself to make sensational declarations, of an apocalyptic, eschatological, and prophetic character, which he declares that he heard from Sister Lucy's very lips. Given the gravity of such statements, the Chancery of Coimbra believed it its duty to order a rigorous investigation into the authenticity of such news which persons too avid for the extraordinary have spread in Mexico, in the United States, in Spain, and finally in Portugal. For the peace of mind of those who have read the documentation published in A Voz and have taken alarm at the thought of fearful cataclysms which, according to such documentation, are to come upon the world in 1960, and still more, in order to put an end to the biased campaign of prophecies, whose authors, perhaps without realizing it, are provoking a storm of ridicule, not only where they themselves are concerned, but also with regard to things reported as having been said by Sister Lucy. The Diocese of Coimbra has decided to publish these words of Sister Lucy, given in answer to questions put by one who has the right to do so. Father Fuentes spoke to me in his capacity as postulator for the causes of beatification of the servants of God, Jacinta and Francisco Marto. We spoke solely of things connected with this subject, therefore, whatever else he refers to is neither exact nor true. I am sorry about it, for I do not understand what good can be done for souls when it is not based on God, who is the truth. I know nothing, and could therefore say nothing, about such punishments, which are falsely attributed to me. The Chancery of Coimbra is in a position to declare that since up to the present Sister Lucy has said everything she believed it her duty to say about Fatima, she has said nothing new and consequently has authorized nobody, at least since February 1955, to publish anything new that might be attributed to her on the subject of Fatima. Coimbra, July 2, 1959. The Chancery of Coimbra. Here is an astonishingly violent text. Father Fuentes is accused of having himself made up statements which he attributed to Sister Lucy. In other words, he is publicly accused of telling a brazen lie. How can this sudden furor be explained? In Mexico, Archbishop Manuel Pio López of Veracruz went to the defense of Father Fuentes, stressing that he had preached nothing that would contradict the message of Fatima, nor had he attributed frightening prophecies to Sister Lucy. Similarly, Cardinal José Garibay y Rivera, Archbishop of Guadalajara, remarked that Father Fuentes had predicted nothing terrible in his preaching. In spite of these authoritative corrections, Father Fuentes was soon relieved of his functions as postulator, and on March 19, 1961, Father Luis Condor, a Hungarian emigrant of the Society of the Divine Word, was appointed to replace him. What had happened? Who had taken the initiative for this untimely reaction? Was it the auxiliary bishop of Coimbra, Don Manuel de Jesus Pereira, who at the time was responsible for the chancery? In such an important matter, it is probable that the order came from higher up, undoubtedly from Rome itself. For in the end, If there was a lie in this sad affair, one may wonder who lied, and the official version is not the most plausible one. The evolution of Father Alonso on this thorny question seems highly instructive to us. Father Alonso rehabilitates Father Fuentes. Entrusted by Bishop Venancio with the critical edition of the documents concerning Fatima, Father Alonso began by adopting the official version on this point, expressing it in Historia de Literatura sobre Fatima. He expressed the official version again in September 1971, during the annual meeting of the French Society of Marian Studies at Pont Main. At that time he declared, "Sister Lucy is not responsible for the ramblings of some of her visitors who spread news which absolutely did not come from her. It must be clearly noted that certain revelations made by the press concerning Sister Lucy cannot be attributed to her, for example, those spread by Father Fuentes and Father Lombardi. That being said, it is all the more remarkable that 5 years later, Father Alonso defended a completely different position. Indeed, in 1976, in The Secret of Fatima, Fact and Legend, without openly accusing the Chancery of Coimbra, the official expert clearly strives to rehabilitate Father Fuentes. Who was right in this lamentable affair? Father Fuentes, the Coimbra diocesan spokesman, or Lucy? We would like to offer an explanation, giving our own modest opinion. 1. What Father Fuentes says in the genuine text of his conference to the Mexican religious community in December, 1957, corresponds no doubt in its essentials to what he heard during his visit to Sister Lucy, for although the text is mingled with the preacher's own oratorical embellishments, and although it is adjusted to conform to a literary pattern, these texts say nothing that Sister Lucy had not said in her numerous published writings. Perhaps the principal defect lay in the presentation of these texts as coming from Lucy's own mouth, and formally and expressly given as a message from her addressed to the world. Sister Lucy did not have this intention. 2. The genuine text, the only one that can be justly attributed to Father Fuentes, does not, in my opinion, contain anything that could give rise to the condemnatory notice issued from Coimbra. On the contrary, it contains a teaching most suited to edify the piety of Christians. 3. The Diocese of Coimbra, and through its Sister Lucy, have made no distinction between the genuine text which alone can be justly attributed to Father Fuentes, and the vast documentation to which we have already referred. An error of judgment was thus committed, for everything was included in one single all-embracing condemnation. This text is clear, and of the highest importance. For if Father Alonso changed his mind, it was because in the meantime, to do his work, he had the opportunity to see Sister Lucy very often. This leaves room for a serious doubt on the authenticity of the seer's declaration published by the Chancery. Everything is explained if a Roman authority demanded a formal and immediate denial from the Bishop of Coimbra. A sad affair, where undoubtedly neither Lucy nor Father Fuentes lied. And if anybody lied at Coimbra, it was undoubtedly to obey an order from higher up. This order is all the more plausible as the new pontificate's orientation was worlds apart from the message published by Father Fuentes. Besides, the allusions to the third secret and the two passages concerning the Pope and the bishops could indeed displease the Roman authorities. At the Vatican, optimism was in the air, and John XXIII, who had announced on January 25, 1959, the upcoming convocation of an ecumenical council, hardly appreciated the prophets of doom. Moreover, Monsignor Loris Capovilla, private secretary and intimate advisor of John XXIII, furnishes us with an interesting declaration concerning the months preceding the violent reaction of the Coimbra Chancery. In the opening months of 1959, an ecclesiastical personality, I do not recall his name, tried to interest Pope John XXIII in the project of a radio message which Sister Lucy could address to humanity. The Pope imposed no decision, leaving it to the judgment of the competent organs. It appears that personally he preferred silence. Whatever the case might be concerning the opportuneness of such an intervention, one can guess the hostile reactions this project must have stirred up in Roman circles, where Father Dani's influence was still preponderant. Not only did Sister Lucy not pronounce the radio message in question, but when Father Fuentes' account revealed the seer's declaration to the press, it provoked the vehement barrage and denial that we have just seen. In this already stormy context, Pope John XXIII was going to read the Third Secret. To the reading of the Third Secret by Pope John. John XXIII, August 1959. As the year 1960 approached, since Bishop Venancio was keeping the most absolute silence on this subject, the specialists themselves were unaware what had become of the envelope containing the Third Secret. Rome, for its part, kept silence. Indeed, for years there was no reliable evidence available concerning Pope John XXIII's decisions regarding the secret of Fatima. Only in 1967, through Cardinal Ottaviani's public conference, and above all after 1977 through Monsignor Loris Capovilla's declarations, was it finally learned what had happened at the Vatican during the years 1959 to 1960. Indeed, in May 1977, after publication of his work O Segredo de Fatima, Father Gerald's Freyer decided to write to John XXIII's former secretary, to ask him for additional information on the Third Secret. On June 20, Monsignor Capovilla answered in a letter containing 7 points, which we will quote in full in an appendix to this chapter. On July 24 of the same year, he answered a series of questions from Father Alonso in a letter which we shall also quote. Using the data supplied by these diverse documents, today we can give a sure, precise answer to many questions which had gone unanswered until 1977. John XXIII receives and reads the final secret. On August 17, 1959, Father Paul Philippe, O.P., a future cardinal who at the time was a superintendent of the Holy Office, came to Castel Gandolfo to place the envelope sealed with wax in the Sovereign Pontiff's hands. Let us remark that this transmission of the secret to the Holy Father was thus vested with an official character and surrounded with a certain solemnity, which attests to the prestige Fatima still had at this period. However, a question comes up: Father Philippe's mission presupposes that the secret, in this summer of 1959, was kept at the Holy Office. Moreover, Monsignor Capovilla confirms it in 2 instances. How long ago, and on whose initiative, had the envelope left the office of Pius XII? We do not know. Monsignor Capovilla also reveals to us that John XXIII, contrary to Pius IX receiving the secrets of La Salette, did not open right away the envelope handed to him. He was content to declare, "I am waiting to read it with my confessor." His confessor at that time was Monsignor Alfredo Cavagna, former national chaplain of the Young Women of Italy. Monsignor Capovilla adds the detail that the reading of the secret was done a few days later. But because of the difficulty caused by expressions proper to the language, help was sought from a Portuguese translator from the Secretariat of State, Monsignor Paulo José Tavares, who later became Bishop of Macau and is now deceased. John XXIII made no pronouncement. As for John XXIII's reaction after reading the secret, and the importance he attributed to it, this is difficult to say. Again, according to Monsignor Capovilla, Pope John XXIII made no pronouncement on the contents of the secret. He said that he preferred to leave to others, to his successor, the appraisal of the text. According to Father Alonso, John XXIII declared more precisely, "This does not concern the years of my pontificate." Problematic consultations. Another important question: to whom did John XXIII reveal the contents of the secret? During his public declaration of February 11, 1967, Cardinal Ottaviani declares that he had read the text himself, "I, who have had the grace and the gift to read the text of the secret, though I too, am bound by the secret, I can say." The cardinal read it, then, but at a date unknown to us. His testimony, which contains, as we will see, numerous and grave inexactitudes, seems to contradict that of Monsignor Capovilla. The secret, the cardinal states, arrived in Rome and was taken to the Sacred Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith. Still sealed, It was later, in 1960, taken to Pope John XXIII. The Pope broke the seal, and opened the envelope. Although it was in Portuguese, he told me afterwards that he understood the text in its entirety. The cardinal seems to assume that John XXIII read the text for the first time then. Yet, we know that he had first requested the help of Monsignor Tavares to understand the meaning of certain Portuguese expressions. Father Laurentin undoubtedly expresses the correct hypothesis when he writes. John XXIII made these super-secret consultations at Castel Gandolfo during the summer of 1959. Then, without mentioning these preliminary actions, he opened the secret officially, in the presence only of Cardinal Ottaviani, Prefect of the Holy Office. The official opening, of the secret, before Cardinal Ottaviani was only the official conclusion of this private inquiry conducted outside the Holy Office. On the other hand, according to Monsignor Capovilla, John XXIII revealed the contents of the secret to several figures in his entourage. The contents of the letter, he writes, were brought to the knowledge of all the leaders of the Holy Office and the Secretariat of State, and to some other people, for example, Cardinal Agaganian. Without any doubt, the Pope spoke about it with his most intimate collaborators. Monsignor Capovilla added. Some people with whom he spoke about Fatima are already dead. Others are still alive, Cardinals Ottaviani, Parente, Philippe, Seymour, Bishop Raimundo Verardo, then from the Commission of the Holy Office, and Monsignor Capovilla. Does this mean that John XXIII had all these people read the exact and integral text of the secret written down by Sister Lucy? We have solid reasons to doubt it, we will come back to these reasons. The Pope undoubtedly contented himself with speaking to them about the secret, to some of them in 1959, to the majority in 1960 or later, and in a rather vague manner. In a deep dark, dark well. The last question we must elucidate is, what later became of Sister Lucy's manuscript? According to Cardinal Ottaviani, John XXIII himself placed it in another envelope, sealed it, and sent it to be placed in one of those archives that are like a well where the paper sinks deeply into the dark, black depths, and where no one can distinguish anything at all. So really, it is difficult to say where the secret of Fatima is now. These words of the Cardinal, clearly intended to discourage all curiosity on this subject, do not shine brightly with the truth. Here Monsignor Capovilla is much more exact. He writes. After reading the text, the Pope wrote a personal note which was transcribed by his secretary, Monsignor Capovilla himself, and which was placed in the envelope containing the secret. John XXIII took the document to the Vatican, and kept it on the writing table of his bedroom until his death, on June 3, 1963. From 1959 to 1963, Monsignor Capovilla states, it stayed on the Pope's work table, sealed. I don't know where it was placed after that. Let us add finally that, if John XXIII consulted some people of his entourage on this subject, during this summer of 1959, in any case, no news of it came out. The experts themselves did not know if the third secret was still at Lyria, if it had been sent to Cardinal Sir Gira, or if it was now at the Vatican. 3. A second disavowal of Fatima, the radio message of Pope John XXIII, September 13, 1959. While at Castel Gandolfo the Holy Father was reading the final secret of Our Lady, the Virgin of Fatima was completing her triumphal mission across Italy. On September 13, anniversary of the fifth apparition, the closing of the National Eucharistic Congress was celebrated. But the most important event of the day, the event for which the bishops had decided on this pilgrimage of Mary, was of course the solemn consecration of Italy to the Immaculate Heart of Mary. We have already spoken of the incomparable success of these 4 months of Our Lady of Fatima's itinerant mission all across the peninsula. On this day, 300,000 of the faithful had gathered at Catania, in this Sicily already favored 6 years earlier by the miracle of Syracuse. The official consecration was pronounced in the name of all the bishops by Cardinal Mimi, papal legate. The President of the Italian Republic sent a brief message on this occasion, which was rather insipid and insignificant. But the great disappointment came from the radio message pronounced by John XXIII. For 4 months, the tour of Our Lady of Fatima had been conceived as a preparation for the solemn act of the country's consecration to the Immaculate Heart of Mary. This preparation had been done, in the most explicit manner, under the sign of Fatima. The majority of the bishops, as they welcomed the venerated image, had recalled the essential points of the message. In this sort of context, the radio message of the Sovereign Pontiff would be extremely important. It was even more important since the Pope, as we know today, had just read the final secret of Our Lady of Fatima, a few weeks earlier. Everybody expected the Holy Father to devote his entire discourse to the Immaculate Heart of Mary, and to the solemn consecration about to take place. Everybody thought he would speak about Our Lady of Fatima and the marvels of grace performed along her path for the last 4 months. Many even hoped that he would allude to the upcoming revelation of her final secret. What a disappointment it was, what scandal even, for the more perceptive ones, to find out that the Pope had resolutely omitted all references to Fatima. Nor did the adversaries fail to remark as much. Father Balick, OFM, a renowned Mariologist, but who had more or less rallied to Danny's theses on Fatima, gave heavy stress to this point a few months later. Significant in this regard is the attitude of the Holy Father John XXIII, who on the occasion of the Eucharistic Congress in 1959, during which the consecration of Italy to the Immaculate Heart of Mary had been prepared and performed, in his discourse, exalted Jesus in the Eucharist and said not a word about Fatima and the secret. In 1963, Father Laurentin is clearly pleased to recall this omission, which was only too obvious. The pastoral sense of John XXIII has indeed felt this problem, the problem which, according to our author, is posed by all consecrations to the Blessed Virgin Mary. For can somebody consecrate himself to something other than God Himself? Collective consecrations would pose an even more difficult problem, to the extent that these consecrations include atheistic peoples. This is obviously in reference to the consecration of Russia requested by Our Lady of Fatima. On the occasion of the Pilgrimage of Marvels, whose object was to prepare for the solemn consecration of the Italian nation to the Immaculate Heart of Mary by the journey of an itinerant statue of Our Lady of Fatima, he sent a message where he insisted on the importance of taking more seriously the practice of the virtues and the realism of the Christian life, and he hardly mentioned the consecration in question. In fact, the long pontifical radio message was completely devoted to the Eucharist. Only a few insignificant words alluded to the consecration to the Immaculate Heart of Mary, decided on by the bishops and fervently prepared for over 4 months by an entire unanimous nation. This sentiment of humility and generosity in the service of God and His Church has led you to the profession of faith and love on this day, a profession which will in the future be more fervent than in the past, after your act of consecration of Italy to the Immaculate Heart of Mary. We are confident that all Italians, in virtue of this homage to the Holy Virgin, will venerate in her, with renewed fervour, the Mother of the mystical body, whose symbol and vital centre is the Eucharist, that they will imitate in her the most perfect model of union with Jesus, our head, that they will unite themselves with her in the offering of the divine victim, and that by her maternal intercession they will implore the gifts of unity and peace for the Church, and especially a richer and more faithful blossoming of priestly vocations. In this way, the consecration will become a motive for a more and more serious commitment to the practice of the Christian virtues, a more effective defense against the evils threatening them, and a source of prosperity, even in this world, according to the promises of Christ. Our Lady of Fatima in the Eternal City, September 14th to 17th, 1959. This surprising reserve on the part of the Holy Father, regarding both the consecration to the Immaculate Heart of Mary and the message of Fatima, was certainly deliberate. Besides, a new proof of this deliberate coolness towards Fatima was given a few days later. In conformity with the program of the Marian Tour, the statue of the Madonna of Fatima arrived at Rome on September 14. It was to remain there until the 17th. During these 3 days, great solemnities took place at the Flaminio Stadium, at the Church of the Immaculate Heart of Mary and at the Basilica of St. John Lateran. The mayor of Rome welcomed Our Lady of Fatima. The crowds gathered in. Yet, Pope John XXIII did not move. He pronounced not a single word of welcome to Our Lady, who visited his diocese at the end of a triumphal journey. L'Osservatore Romano contented itself, on September 16, and again on October 2 in its French edition, with publishing the text of the homily pronounced at Fatima by Cardinal Roncalli, on May 13, 1956. The organ of the Holy See called it a special discourse, which it seems particularly opportune these days to recall or make known to many. Yet this homily contained nothing very remarkable, except no doubt this little sentence which the Vatican again judged particularly opportune early in 1960, faced with the increasingly restive wait for the revelation of the great secret. "This is not the moment," Cardinal Roncalli had declared, "to penetrate and to study, which is indeed permitted, in a humble and pious spirit, the three great secrets of Fatima confided to the seers. It is fitting to respect their profound mystery." In September 1959, John XXIII already knew these three secrets, but undoubtedly he had already resolved not to reveal them to the faithful. On September 17, Our Lady of Fatima left Rome for Trieste, the final stage of her mission, where the cornerstone was to be blessed for a sanctuary dedicated to Mary, Mother and Queen, built as a perpetual remembrance of Italy's consecration to the Immaculate Heart of Mary. On September 19, John XXIII pronounced a radio message on this occasion, but again without making any mention of the requests of Fatima, and making only a quick reference to the act of consecration of Italy. A derisory compensation. Had anybody remarked to Pope John XXIII that the contents of his radio messages of September 13 and 17, and especially the coolness and apparent indifference he had manifested for Our Lady of Fatima during her visit to Rome, had scandalized the faithful and risked lowering the Pope's standing in the eyes of Portuguese church authorities. In any case, as often happened later, the Pope made a gesture to try to compensate for the bad impression left by his previous decisions. On September 22, 1959, the Nunciature of Lisbon informed the rector of the sanctuary of the Vatican's desire to send the sanctuary the doves arriving that day from Italy with the Pilgrim Virgin statue. The compensation was derisory. Fatima, sign of contradiction. In fact, as the months passed, the clearer it became that the orientations of the new pontificate were in a spirit contrary to that of the Fatima message. In these circumstances, would the third secret be revealed in 1960, as planned? Disquiet on this point was not without foundation. More than ever, Fatima was going to appear as a sign of contradiction, revealing what was in men's hearts. An article appearing on October 3 in Civiltà Cattolica, the knowledgeable Jesuit review in Rome, which enjoyed an immense audience because it was considered an unofficial organ of the Vatican, left no doubt about the all-powerful society's positions regarding Fatima. The Jesuits had been won over to Father Dani's position. They did all they could to impose his views and create obstacles to the publication of the third secret. At the approach of the year 1960, we hear of talk by certain people, with greater insistence, about the supposed third part of the secret revealed to the three seers of Fatima and which, put in writing by Sister Lucy and sent to the ecclesiastical authorities, was supposed to be opened and perhaps also revealed to the public itself next year. As we remind everybody of the prudence necessary when speaking or writing, often with arbitrary reasoning, on such a subject, an extremely opportune note arrives from the Chancery of Coimbra. The article goes on to quote at length the declaration of July 2, 1959, whose extreme opportuneness for the adversaries of Fatima leads us to suspect that they undoubtedly were not strangers to its publication. They immediately invoked this text, at several points and with insistence, to justify the non-publication of the secret. However, in this year 1959, notwithstanding the underhanded, hypocritical opposition of the progressive, anti-Fatima minority, publication of the third secret still seemed certain. as F. Stein wrote at the time, in Mensajum de Fatima. The testimonies which have announced the revelation of the secret for 1960 are of such weight and so numerous that in our opinion, even if the ecclesiastical authorities of Fatima, in 1959 the experts themselves were still unaware that Rome had taken the secret from the Bishop of Lyria over 2 years ago, had not yet resolved to publish the secret in 1960, they would now see themselves forced to do so by the circumstances. This was the voice of wisdom and good sense, as well as an informed sense of the supernatural. For in this grave matter, did not the honor of Our Lady, and the greatest good for souls, alone have to guide the competent authorities' decision, to the exclusion of every other consideration? Trusting in the Church, the faithful were right to hope that the Blessed Virgin's maternal warning would not be hidden under a bushel. Appendix, John XXIII and the Third Secret according to Messenger Capovilla. We have already indicated in what circumstances Monsignor Loris Capovilla, former secretary and advisor of John XXIII, was led on two occasions during the summer of 1977 to give important information on the Third Secret of Fatima. Concerning this, we have given all the essential facts during our account of the events of summer 1959. By way of documentation, however, we now give these two texts in full. They call for one preliminary remark: the precision and objective tone of these two letters must not fool us. They are to be read with great critical prudence, for not everything should be taken at face value, far from it. Monsignor Capovilla does his utmost to lessen the responsibility of John XXIII, and his own, for the non-publication of the secret in 1960. We will show in our next chapter that some of these statements are gravely incomplete, inexact, or even, it must be said, unquestionably false. Letter to Father Freyr, June 20, 1977. Reverend Father and Brother, I am in a position to respond as follows to your letter of last May 15. 1. On August 17, 1959, Pope John received from the hands of Father Paul Philippe, then Commissioner of the Holy Office, the letter relating to what is called the Secret of Fatima, and which was kept at the Holy Office. He said at that time, I am waiting to read it with my confessor, Monsignor Alfredo Cavagna. 2. In fact, the reading took place a few days later. But because of the difficulty due to expressions proper to the language, they requested the help of the Portuguese translator of the Secretariat of State, Monsignor Paulo José Tavares, who later became Bishop of Macau. 3. The contents of the letter were brought to the knowledge of all the leaders of the Holy Office and the Secretariat of State, and also a few other persons. Without any doubt, the Pope spoke about it with his most intimate collaborators. 4. After the reading of the text, the Pope wrote down a personal note, which was transcribed by his secretary, Monsignor Capovilla, and which was placed in the envelope containing the secret. 5. Pope John XXIII made no pronouncement on the contents of the secret. He said that he preferred to leave to others, to his successor, the appraisal of this text. 6. The document was kept in the writing table of John XXIII's apartment, until his death. 7. Paul VI, after his election, asked for information regarding this document. I no longer recall if it was in July 1963 or a few months after. We may believe he read the secret. This is all I know on this point. I hope I have been precise. Pray for me. Your most devoted servant, Loris Capovilla. Replies to Father Alonso, July 24, 1977. 1. John XXIII frequently conversed with me about Fatima, and devotion to Mary, which is spreading from there all over the world. His personal attitude concerning supernatural manifestations was characterized by a serene equilibrium. He was inclined neither to suggestion, as though he had discovered the complete solution to the evils affecting humanity, nor to destructive criticism. He let himself be guided by the prayer of Jesus, Mt. 11:25, Lk. 10:21, and again by 1 Cor 1:27-29. 2. In the opening months of 1959, an ecclesiastical personality, I do not recall his name, tried to interest him in the project of a radio message which Sister Lucy could address to humanity. This is according to what I gathered about it. He made no decision, leaving the judgment to the competent ecclesiastical agency. It appears that personally he preferred silence. 3. For his actions he always asked for advice, either from his collaborators from the Secretariat of State and the Holy Office or from his confessor, Monsignor Alfredo Cavagna, a knowledgeable, cultured, prudent, and pious priest, and very devoted to Our Lady. 4. Concerning the reading of the sealed envelope containing Sister Lucy's manuscript, here is my deposition. He received it from the hands of Father Paul Philippe, O.P., who was then the Commissioner of the Holy Office, on August 17, 1959, at Castel Gandolfo. He told me, I am waiting to read it with my confessor. Because the text was difficult, due to expressions proper to the language, they requested the help of Monsignor Paulo Tavares, Portuguese translator of the Secretariat of State, who later became Bishop of Macau. 5. Knowledge of the contents was given to the heads of the Secretariat of State and the Holy Office, and to a few other persons, for example, Cardinal Agaganian. After reading it, the Pope wrote a personal note, which was transcribed by his private secretary, Monsignor Loris Capovilla, and attached to the envelope containing the secret. All I know of it is that the Pope made no pronouncement on the subject. He said that he preferred to leave the decision to others, to his successor. He brought the document to the Vatican and kept it in the bureau of his bedroom until his death, June 3, 1963. Paul VI asked for information about the envelope shortly after his election. We may believe that he read it. 6. John the 23rd's thinking is explicit in numerous, sick, allocutions. I am presenting a few texts. During general audiences, he spoke many times, not about the secret, but about devotion to the Immaculate Heart of Mary and of Fatima. 7. Some people with whom he spoke of Fatima are already dead. Others are still alive, Cardinals Ottaviani, Parente, Philippe, Seymour, Bishop Raimundo Verardo, then from the Commission of the Holy Office, and Monsignor Capovilla. 8. The calling of the council took place before John XXIII read the secret. One cannot demonstrate historically a relation between the secret and the announcement of the council. 9. However, Cardinal Fernando Cento, Apostolic Nuncio to Portugal from 1953 to 1958, spoke favorably to the Pope on the subject of Fatima and Sister Lucy. 10. John XXIII stated many times that the union of the Orthodox Church would be the result of long work. He was convinced that the present generation would not see its crowning. Hence, I would not say that these are optimistic forecasts. 11. I do not recall the address of the envelope, with the letter of the third secret. If Cardinal Ottaviani stated that it was addressed to the Pope, this must be true, but at the time it was Pius XII who sent it to the Holy Office without having read it. Naturally, I may be mistaken. In fact, the envelope was kept at the Holy Office before the election of John XXIII. 12. It was never said that the document had been removed or was lost from sight. From 1959 to 1963 it remained closed, on the Pope's work table. I don't know where it was placed afterwards. 13. Nobody ever said that the document had to be made public, sic. Nor can I explain why, in 1960, the conviction spread that it had to be published. 14. I did not hear that anybody advised its disclosure, sic. I have the impression, all the same, that at the Vatican the opinion prevailed that it was proper to respect the reserve adopted by Pius XII. Loreto, July 24, 1977.